From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Bolton Howe joins us with some incredible stories, followed by conversations with Linda, your phone calls. Here's what's happening. While the U.S. has said it will act in its best interests in dealing with the Syrian crisis, now Britain, though, has rejected any military intervention. Washington accuses Syrian government forces of using chemical weapons. Now, that's a claim denied by Damascus. The move by British military, meanwhile, has ruled out London's involvement in any U.S.-led strikes against Syria. Despite the surprise outcome in the parliament of Washington's key ally, U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said America would continue to seek out an international coalition willing to act together on the Syrian crisis. Ryan Morrow is with us of the Clarion Project. Ryan, this has got to come as a shock to the U.S. government that Britain has bowed out.
Oh, definitely, because Britain gave every sign of confidence that they had the support necessary in order to take part in the strike. However, once UN inspectors come back with their report based on the soil samples, in a few more days, that could potentially lead to another vote and a change in public opinion.
At this point, why did Britain elect to back out?
Well, because, first of all, there's a natural reluctance to get involved in these type of military conflicts after we've had so many wars that the opinion is just hardened against it. But largely, the conversation is based around why do we have to go in so quickly, particularly when UN inspectors are just asking for a few more days to reach conclusions. So I interpret this more as a vote against the timing of the strikes as opposed to a vote against the strikes entirely.
And Ryan, you know, on the 10-plus-year heels of Iraq, don't you think most Americans are a little weary and a little distrustful in terms of how this is unfolding?
Oh, without a doubt. And that's why I think that the Obama administration has a responsibility to release what intelligence that they can in relation to whether Assad's regime used chemical weapons. The case really hasn't been made for strikes. Even if you support them, I don't think anyone can argue that there hasn't been an address by the president to try and rally public opinion behind this.
Thanks, Ryan. You know, there's no question that if Assad used chemical weapons, killing 1,300 plus people, that he's got to be taken out. It's despicable. However, we really don't know who did it. It could have been the rebels. The rebels could have done this to try to pull us in. And that's where, we're in a quandary right now. Fast food workers in 50 cities across the United States walking off their jobs as they protest for higher wages. Organizers say that it's the largest strike to hit the $200 billion fast food industry. Workers from fast food giants McDonald's, Wendy's, Burger King, Yum Brands, owned by KFC, they're calling on their employers to pay them a minimum of $15 an hour and allow them to form unions without retaliation. Well, we've all heard don't text and drive. Now a New Jersey State Appeals Court has an addendum. Don't knowingly text the driver, or you could be held liable if he causes a crash. Kyle Best was behind the wheel of his pickup in September 2009, driving down a rural highway when Shannon Colonna sent him a text. His girlfriend, the two were teens at the time. He was 18, she was 17. They were dating. They sent each other 62 text messages that day. Now, in the opposing lane of traffic, a David Kubert was cruising along on a big blue touring motorcycle with his wife, Linda, along for the ride. They approached Best at exactly the wrong time. They got hit. They both sued. They lost their legs. Horrible, tragic story. But in New Jersey, they're now saying, if you know someone's driving and you send them a text and they get involved in an accident, you too can be found liable. The head-splitting migraine attack that knocks you off your feet may also put you at risk of permanent changes in the brain, according to an analysis of 19 medical studies. The potential for increased abnormalities in the signal carrying the matter of the brain appears strongest among those who suffer headache warning systems, such as flashes of light, blind spots, and tingling. Let's check in with the man who knows more about the brain than anybody I know, Neil Slade. Neil, tell me a little bit about this. Hi.
Well, first of all, I did a lot of looking into this, and this was a recent report in Neurology Journal. And the most interesting part about this report is the way that the report itself has been twisted by many other news reporting agencies. The report really shows that there is a correlation between changes in the white matter of the brain and people who suffer migraine headaches.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it really shows. The report doesn't show that there are any significant risks that occur down the line. In fact, it shows just the opposite. As the patient with a migraine becomes older, these types of changes in the brain are actually stabilized. There are no symptoms related to these changes in the white matter. There's no any other kind of medical problems associated with the changes. All the study just does is show that people who have migraines have these changes to their brain that looks like they occur early in life. So what many news reporting agencies have done is reported this as migraines cause brain damage.
Yeah, it's all over. Headlines every place.
It's not the case at all. So people can look at the neurology report for themselves and see exactly what they're talking about here.
In the meantime, Neil, people who have migraines get knocked off their feet. Very painful for them. What causes them?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm in a family that has a genetic predisposition to migraines. So I know very personally what migraines. Migraines are a constriction of the blood vessels inside the brain, and it causes pain and severe discomfort. Typically, there's many things that trigger, but the most common triggers and causes for migraines, there's a substance called tyramine, which has been found to be a trigger, and that's found in foods like cheese and red wine and chocolate. MSG can cause migraines in some people, but often just stress or lack of sleep. So the preventative for all of these is, first of all, avoid overconsumption of those foods that contain tyramine, like cheese or red wine or chocolate. Get plenty of moderate exercise. Make sure you get regular amounts of good sleep every night and reduce the stress. And that's how you can prevent the migraines. There are medicines, fortunately, that have been developed in the past 10 years that are really a miracle to people. And these are like medicines that originally came out like Imitrex, but these now have gone off of their copyright. So whereas a Imitrex pill might have cost $20 a pill 5 years ago, now they're maybe only like $1 a pill now. So both preventative and treatment is available to people, and it's come quite a long way in just the past few years.
Neil's website, neilslade.com. Miniature human brains have been grown in a lab, and a feat that scientists hope will transform the understanding of neurological disorders. The pea-sized structures reach the same level of development as in a 9-week-old fetus, but are incapable of thought, they say. So we heard a couple people talking today about the bad, rotten luck they've been having lately, and I called producer Tom and said, you know what, let's do an hour on luck. So up next, Tony Davidson joins us, author of Luck, Understanding Luck, and Improving the Odds. It's all about you. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, are you feeling lucky? Anthony Davidson, who long studied luck and its effect on risk-taking. Anthony has appeared on True TV, and his research on luck gives him the attitude that luck can be and is part of everyone's life. Tony, welcome back. How are you?
Great, George. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I appreciate it tonight.
You know, I heard two people today talking about how unlucky they are, and I thought of you, and I said, you know what, it's time. What is it that creates luck, Tony? Some people are lucky, other people aren't.
Well, you know, I've always taken the view that luck is something that is an aspect of our personality, and for me, luck is a pretty straightforward thing. There are two sides to it. It's like a coin. there's an intellectual side and there's an emotional side. And the intellectual side basically says we go into situations as people, we don't always have all the information. We can't perfectly predict the outcome of situations. So if we go into a situation that's uncertain and we get a good result, that's good luck. If we get a bad result, it's bad luck. And that's one side of the coin. That's the intellectual side of luck. But there's also an emotional side to it. It's a force of nature. It's part of the mystery of life. And it's something we can't always explain. How do we get on a roll? How do we be in the zone? How do we get that great feeling that everything is either going our way or not going our way? So for me, luck is really, it's a two-sided thing. It's intellectual and emotional. And really the trick to understanding luck and to improving your ability to have it in a whole sense is to connect the two. And the way to do that, I maintain, is to understand what luck means to you as an individual, because it's different for everybody. What may be my luck is not the same as your luck as the next person's luck. So what we try to do in understanding luck and improving the odds is to help people figure out what luck means to them, how to build a relationship with luck, how to personalize it.
Can luck be also called fate?
Well, I mean, as far as that point is concerned, I do believe that some people are born lucky. You flip on the TV or look at any of the celebrities that we have today, and you kind of wonder, gee, they were born lucky.
Yeah.
They have wealth, they have beauty, they have the life, they have the style, they got it all. And you have to kind of say to yourself, the fates were with them. But at the same time, my view of luck is that each life is precious and that everybody has luck if they understand what it means to them. We all have the gift of life, and that's lucky. Our job is to figure out what it means to each of us.
I mean, to some, luck is going to the casino and winning at slot machines or table games. To others, luck is having a great family and having health. So you're right. It varies, doesn't it?
Yes, it varies from person to person. And even further, it varies within our own personal lives. What may have been lucky, or what I may have viewed as lucky 30 years ago, is not necessarily what I view as lucky today. So it shifts. It's almost like a chameleon. You know, the color of it changes depending on where you sit. And as your life evolves, your view of life, of luck, certainly may change. And what we try to do in the book is not take a short-term view of luck, but take a long-term view of luck, and in a fully matured sense of luck, structure ways for people to view it in the full spectrum of their life.
Is there a science behind luck, or is it supernatural, Tony?
Well, I think certainly there is an aspect to it which belongs to the realm of the mysterious. You know, you're walking along the street and there's a $100 bill, and it's yours. Somebody didn't grab it, you grabbed it. Or the people that win the super lotteries. I mean, there are forces of nature out there that help in part explain luck. On the other hand, I think to the extent that people take the time to bring luck down from the realm of the mysterious into their own personal lives, understand what it means to them, then it actually can go from the mysterious to the real.
When people want to change their luck, when they want to alter things, what do they do? How can they do that?
Well, you know, our book is chock full of methods to help understand luck, how to personalize it and develop a relationship with it. And of all the the items in the book, I think there are two key ones that help people create a ladder or a framework to understand luck and to improve their ability to get it. One is what I call a diversified luck portfolio. And in the same way that people have diversified stock portfolios, what I envision is short-term luck assets and long-term luck assets. So short-term luck assets include playing games, participating in sports, doing hobbies, collecting, maybe gambling, all the short-term things that people love to play with. Play, wish, hope, dream, part of the spirit of life is connecting to that mysterious, and these short-term luck assets enable you to do it. But there are also long-term luck assets, including relationships, career, health. Gotcha. And the key really is to keep a balance of a diversified luck portfolio. So if it's not working in one area, you can use something else, and you have a broad view of where luck is in your life. And if it's not in one area, you cultivate it in another area.
Tony, I have found that mood is also directly related to the type of luck you have. If you're generally in a good mood, if you're generally a happy person, I have seen people to be a little more luckier than those people who are down and out and negative.
I don't disagree with that. I think, you know, but in, I totally agree that if the power of positive thinking reinforces the ability to be lucky, but I don't think it's a vague, I'm happy, I'm positive, and good things will happen to me. I think it's more, you're in touch, when you're in a good mood, you're in touch with your feelings, you're thinking clearly, all engines are going. So that means that you're really in touch with yourself, and that enables the luck to happen because you're fulfilling who you are. So it goes hand in hand with the philosophy of luck, that it's a personal thing. And sure, when you're feeling great about yourself and you're thinking clearly, you know what you want, you're feeling clearly, you know what you feel, then you're being you. And that's exactly what luck is, being you. That's a fully matured view of luck, fulfilling who you are.
It's amazing how it works, Tony, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, to keep that feeling going, but when you have it, it's the greatest thing in the world. And I think part of the understanding of luck is it's that beautiful feeling, like, you know, you're playing in a softball game and you're hitting everything and you're catching everything and you have a great game. That's a great feeling, but it's momentary. It's a yes. game. And for me, the win-win is understanding in the game of life that if you take the time to cultivate luck, to understand it, to understand what it means to you as an individual, then you have the ability to win at the game of life. Knowledge, learning, hard work, key factors in being successful in life. But luck is an aspect of our personalities, which if we also understand that, we have a greater ability to win in the long term in the game of life.
Are some children who probably don't even understand what luck is luckier than other kids?
I think so. I couldn't disagree with that. I think, you know, some people certainly seem to be luckier, but maybe it's just that they're more in touch with who they are, more confident, more aware of what they're thinking and what they're feeling, and that they innately have developed at an earlier age, intuitively, the ability to act upon who they are, and they don't need to step back and deliberate, gee, who am I, to have that happen. They just do it instinctively.
But can you tell, Tony, if somebody walks into a room, if they're going to be lucky or not by just their attitude?
It depends what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, if they come in with that grace, I mean, can you generally tell?
I think people that are confident certainly give off that aura of Mr. Lucky or
confidence.
You know, the lucky guy kind of thing.
We're going to talk more, Tony, and we'll take some phone calls with you. Tony Davidson with us. Luck, understanding luck and improving the odds. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Tony Davidson with us this hour as we talk about his work, Luck, Understanding Luck. Tony, how did you get into this? How did was there an episode even with yourself that got you into luck?
Well, I basically, I was a lawyer, and lawyers spend most of their time trying to build certainty. When you prepare a case, you don't want to leave anything to chance. So in preparation for a case or a deal, you want to have all the information, but there's always going to be that 5, 10% that you're unsure of. You know, in a trial, you're not sure what one juror might do versus another. So there's always an element of chance. I spent years practicing law, dealing with certainty. And when I retired from the practice of law, it was natural for me to turn my attention to that 5%. Can I understand chance? Can I understand the uncertainty of life? And can I take that 5 or 10% that I'm never going to be sure of? Can I take that down to 2%? Can I take that down to 1%? Can I understand luck? And will that help me in my life? So after retiring from practicing law, I turned my attention to luck and trying to understand it, and spent years basically dealing with the philosophy of luck, trying to understand the whole subject. And at the end of it, having written the book, having thought about it for years, I truly feel that I've taken that 10% in my life that was uncertain. I've reduced that percentage to maybe 2%. And I love it. I love having developed a relationship with what luck means to me.
Friend of mine was playing blackjack yesterday. He lost, he said, 27 hands in a row. To me, that defies logic. He said he's playing one hand, two hands. No matter what he did, he lost. Now,
don't tell me where he was playing blackjack.
No, I won't.
You know, I've seen roulette tables hit black 30 times in a row. One Christmas Eve, I saw a roulette table hit 25 reds in a row. The board was lit up like a Christmas tree. It was beautiful, all red and white, like, you know, candy canes on a tray. These things happen. The streaks, the patterns, the unusual, unexplained events in gambling. You see incredible patterns of things, whether it's a run of hands in blackjack, winning or losing, or in roulette. Given the law of large numbers, that there are variables along the way, you are going to see statistical anomalies that create these incredible patterns. But they're ephemeral. They come and they go. And the great majority of time, it's back and forth, back and forth, and eventually it reaches statistical averages. But when you're viewing it, when you're in that situation, it can be truly magical. Especially if you're on the upside of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Nobody wants to be on the other end. Let's take some calls. We'll go to Brendan in Erie, Pennsylvania to get us started here, east of the Rockies. Hey, Brendan, good morning.
George, hey, Tony. Well, you guys are talking luck, and I just knew I had to call in.
Alrighty.
I've always had a kind of a weird thing. I call it precognitive knowledge of when I'm going to have luck. I always know when I'm going to get lucky, such as tonight when I called. I said, whoop, I'm going to get in tonight, and that was the first caller.
There you are, yeah.
I was wondering, did he do any work on the precognitive thought as far as that has anything to do with luck?
Well, my take on that is it's essentially – It goes back to the start of our conversation this evening, which is luck has a duality. There's a rational side to it, and there's an emotional side to it. And there's no doubt that there are times when you're getting lucky that you feel it. You just know. Conversely, there are times where you feel unlucky and you have one of those days. I don't think necessarily there's a rational explanation for how you know you're going to get lucky, but it is a force of nature, and that is part of the mystery of luck. Typically, though, that is more of a short-term characteristic of luck than a long-term thing. It comes and it goes. And it doesn't happen often, but it does happen throughout our lives that we have these cognitions that we just know we're going to be lucky, or we have this feeling that it's not going to be. And that, I think, will probably always remain in the mysterious realm of luck.
Tony, is luck out there in the universe? Is it this invisible force that's there that some people tap into knowingly or unknowingly and others just simply can't?
Yes. For me, it's basically, I do believe it's part of the force of life. But what I've tried to do, and one of the motivations for the book was, if people take the time to understand luck and what it means to them, and they use the various tools to connect to luck, then they will have a greater likelihood of having it, of tapping into it.
I think so, too. And I think the more you do it, the better you get, don't you?
Yes, I think the more time you devote to understanding what it means to you, how it plays out in your life, if something really matters or doesn't matter, if you look at all the angles, if you study it and take it into like a course, you know, like algebra, like geometry, if you take the course, then you become familiar with its patterns and its appearances, and they're not as much of a surprise to you. You kind of take them into you as part of life. And I truly believe, as much as our lives are special and unique and mysterious, that luck is part of that spirit of life. And so the two are not separate. They come together in that.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Let's go west of the Rockies. Richard's in Mesa, Arizona. Richard, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I want to know if this is bad luck or fate. Now, I'm trying to make a long story short here,
okay,
but I was having an affair with a married woman, okay, and I broke it off, but I already had plans to go up to see her in another state, okay? The husband seen my picture on the internet, okay, and he knew my name. I went out of state. She did not know I was coming up there, and I just wanted to go up there and relax, okay? I couldn't cancel my flight. So I had somebody pick me up from the airport, and I go to a restaurant in this town. This is in a one-horse town, okay, and up in another state. And I'm sitting there, and it just so happens the husband comes into the restaurant and sits 4 feet behind me with his daughter and her friend.
Now, did you know what he looked like?
Yeah, I know what he looked. I've seen his picture before, but my mind couldn't compute that this could actually be happening. Like, he could be sitting, like, behind me. I'm like, no way. And I was coming in and out of the restaurant because I wanted to have a cigarette at the time I smoked. And this didn't happen but a few months ago. And it just so happens that it was him. And out of all the millions of people that live up in this area, I had to go to this one restaurant, which he had to be sitting in. And no one knew I was going up there. It was a secret because I just wanted to go up there and relax, okay? And he ended up taking my picture sitting at the table with the person that picked me up from the airport and sent it to my wife. Is that bad luck or is it just fate?
Well, first of all, what happened with you and your wife?
I had my ways. I just pretty much told her I just wanted to go up there to relax.
All right.
And she knew I was leaving the state. She drove me to the airport.
You lucked out on that one, I guess. Is it luck or fate? What do you think, Tony?
Well, I don't think it's fate, because I think, you know, certainly we have some control of our luck destinies. And Richard, tell me, do you think you were pushing your luck by going to this area?
What was that?
Do you think you were pushed when you went to this, you know, when you took the trip just to go up there and relax?
Yeah.
Did you have in your mind at all that you were pushing your luck? That you were taking a risk?
Sort of, yes. Sort of, kind of, but not really. It wasn't, this is Ogden, Utah. It's not a little town, okay?
No,
it's small, but it's not huge, but, you know.
I think, Tony and Richard, that people have this innate ability to draw people together. There's this wireless internet, as I've called it for so many years. And, you know, like you're thinking of a song and it comes on the radio, or you're thinking of somebody and in a phone call comes in and it's them. I think in this case, I think Richard conjured up this event by going there, going to Ogden, Utah. He sits down. He's probably thinking about, you know, her and the husband and all that. I think he created it in his own mind.
And he broke it off, and there he is, and he sees the husband, and maybe he tells himself, I made the right decision to stop, to break it off, and this is the human drama playing out.
And the husband takes a picture of him and sends it to his wife.
Richard, what do you think?
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, what do I think?
Yeah.
I think that it's fate. I think I still can't believe that it actually happened at that point. I still can't. That's why I'm calling. I can't believe the odds against it.
I think it's fate too. Tony, let me ask you this. We've talked about luck here in terms of good luck. But what about bad luck? That happens too, doesn't it?
There's no doubt. I mean, you know, certainly my study and our book focuses on good luck and capturing it, because we do want to limit bad luck in our lives, but bad luck does happen, and it's the reverse. It's we go into situations, we don't have all the information, we can't predict, and we go into so many situations that are uncertain, and if the outcome is negative, it's bad luck. And that's the intellectual side of it, and the emotional side is sometimes it's just the force of nature is that it's just a situation is bad. It creates bad luck. And we say, geez, you know, did that really just happen? But it does sometimes. And I think the only way to deal with it is to put it in the perspective of our whole life and say, what happened? Why did it happen? What am I going to learn from it? And sometimes, you know, having thought about luck so much, when bad things happen, when there's bad luck, I try to look at it and say, well, you know, something bad just happened, but did it happen for a reason? Is there something good that came out of it? I don't just leave it at something bad happened, there's bad luck there. I try to look to turn it around and say it happened for a reason, and I'm going to try to turn it so that it's a good thing, so that good luck comes out of it. So I correct the situation, so I fix it. And it happened for a reason.
Off to Toronto we go now on the International 9. Raheem is with us. Good morning, Raheem.
Good morning, sir. Josh Norrie, and good morning, Mr. Tony. Before you went on break, you were talking about the kids. Like, our kids are pretty fortunate and pampered. So my question to you, sir, how about those kids who are living in third world country or Sudan, where they don't have even clean water to drink or food, or in war they are getting killed? They are depending on other persons, and where is their luck then? I mean, you know, whom to blame to, you know, their luck? Where do they stand? I hope you understand my question.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, there are some people who are underprivileged, that they're in the wrong area. They're, you know, by the luck of draw, right? They ended up being born in a third world nation. What's up with their luck, Tony?
Well, as I said, you know, early in our conversation, for me, every life is special. We are all unique, and the gift of life is special and important. Children that are privileged certainly can go through life and have a fulfilled life, develop their own personalities, reach their full potential. But there are obviously children and adults throughout the world that are underprivileged and aren't afforded that opportunity to fulfill who they are and what they are, and they depend upon the governments or the mercies of situations to help them. And that is the reality. You know, I think in terms of talking about luck in the mystical sense, in that situation, doesn't make sense. It's more the reality of the situation is these people are not afforded the opportunity to discover themselves, and it's a shame.
It is a shame. You know the old saying too, Tony, that they were dealt a bad deck. Where does that come about?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think again it's broader than just luck. I think again the beauty of life is to develop ourselves and figure out who we are, and then we're able to contribute to society. Once we know who we are, we can fulfill our destinies, and that's lucky. I mean, to come through life and say I did what I wanted to do is the luck, probably the luckiest feeling in the world. And some people aren't given that opportunity. And I don't know if that is so much luck, or as we said in our last, you know, question, whether that's fate.
Let's go to Lewistown, Montana. Kirby's standing by. Hi, Kirby. Go ahead. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
You know, my grandparents were around, and my great-grandparents were around when I was a little child, and they always said that you make your own luck by preparing and fulfilling all the prerequisites of what you want to have happen. And in my case, I went to the Air Force Academy, but before I went there, I did all the things, you know, for the testing. You know, I prepared for the physical fitness tests. I studied hard in all the different areas so that when it came time to take the tests, I did well in the tests so that I could get selected to go there. And I think that a lot of luck is preparing in advance for the right thing to happen. And of course, it works conversely. If you don't prepare, you know, then you may not be given the opportunity because you don't do well enough in the selection process for whatever you're trying to get, that, you know, your luck is going to be bad because you didn't prepare. Does that make
absolutely
any sense?
Kirby, I think, you know, certainly when we talk about luck as an aspect of personality, it's not exclusive. It's not the only thing. So if you're able to go to school, if you're able to go to college and work hard, study, learn, create knowledge, everything you can do intellectually to prepare yourself for the world takes you a long way. And by doing so, you have more information, so the situations you go into are more predictable, because you're armed with more information. Nevertheless, there's still an aspect of life that's uncertain that you won't ever be able to prepare for or get the information for.
Well, let me tell you, it was lucky, Tony, finding you tonight, and thank you for coming on the program. Up next, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.